Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dadcast. I'm JP. That guy is Nick. Nick, how are you, brother?
Dude, I'm so good.
Are you?
I feel good for you, too.
Oh, man.
My Niners won.
They did. Now, depending on when this episode is actually going to air, it's probably going to be a little bit later down the line from the day that it has been recorded. But for all that are watching this, last night was the last regular season game of the 21 NFL season. Nick is a Niner fan. I am a Raider fan. We both got in. There was high drama. We'll discuss that later. It is not important. What is important right now is the man, the myth, the legend who is joining us today on Dadcast. Welcome. I want to say country music artist. They call him the Weird Al Yankovic of country music. He's a great guy. He's awesome. He is Cletus T. Judd. Welcome to Dadcast, man. How are you?
Hey, guys. Y'all there. Hey, buddy. Thank you for having me. It's always been a pleasure to be compared to a guy with a name Weird in his name. So that's, yeah. And I've been with me for a long time.
And I'm willing to bet that wasn't the first time you've heard it, nor will it be the last.
And it's a compliment, too. You know, Lord, I remember back in 1982, I heard Weird Al do I Lost on Jeopardy.
Right.
If you remember.
I do.
And
that makes you old.
And was a big fan of Weird Al the entire time. I actually tried to get him to do a duet with me several years ago. And his manager, Jay Levy, said, look, he turned down Dean Martin. He dang sure ain't going to do it with you. So,
wow.
Are you on TikTok, Cletus?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's a new thing that you can duet there, and it's not as much, you know, commitment from other artists. So, you know, maybe we can work it out that way. Yeah. All right.
Give that a try. I love TikTok too. I've only been on it about a year, but it's probably my favorite social media forum. I love it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too. I was supposed to, you know, be in bed by around 11 last night, and you know, next thing I know, it's 1:30 a.m. And look at this, swiping it. All right,
I'm not doing video anymore, so I can stay up late.
Well, there you go. All right, the very, very first question, the rite of passage, Cletus, and I know you know what's coming because we've spoken. We know that you've watched the show before, but here we go. We already know the answer. The viewers probably know the answer, but the few that are listening and watching that may not, here it is. Cletus T. Judd, are you a dad?
Absolutely, 100%. I'm all dad, 100%. I'm all in. I suck at it, according to my kids, but...
I think we all do. That's kind of according to all of our kids. They all say we suck.
Yeah. It used to be cool, you know, when they were younger, they really enjoyed hanging out with me, and especially my, you know, I have stepkids now, but my daughter, she loved hanging out with me. But a couple of years ago, she said, "Look, Dad, we're kind of sick and tired of those old videos. Why don't you go do something else and get out of the house?"
So, right.
That was their way of saying, we're done with you unless we need gas money. Get out of here.
How old is your daughter?
My Caitlin is 17. My stepdaughter Isabella is 17. And my stepson Jeremiah is 15.
So. All right. So you are literally thick in the middle of the chaos, as we like to call it.
I hope we can say this on a podcast, but both my daughters started their period on the same days. Get you some of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. What the odds of that happening? That's the devil punishing me right there.
I want to make something up to just, you know, try to compare with that, but I'm not even going to bother.
Hey, I'll give you one. My daughter and my wife are on the same cycle. It's a freaking nightmare.
I think this may be the first time in the history of the Dadcast podcast that we have started talking about the ladies' menstrual cycles. Wow.
I apologize in advance.
No, that's all right. You know, it's some...
That feel for me, I can tell you.
At some point, we got to cover everything. You know, we got to run the gamut here. So exactly. It might as well be today. Well, that is right, awesome.
So how do you deal with it? Do you have like a separate house you get to go live in? Because I would love one.
I just stay in the car. I just stay in the car a week at a time. Yeah, I just pull out of the garage and cut the radio on and sleep in the front seat because it's like entering demonic world during that one particular week. And you know, they're not biological either. So what was the odds of that happening? You
right.
Know, both age start the same time and one handles it better than the other. I'm not going to say no names, but a little better than the other one.
That's, oh, man. Good stuff, man. So it's funny. You say you go to the car, and I know there's some truth to that. I know because I've applied it myself. Now, I recently bought a Tesla, Cletus. So, excuse me. Yeah, I know. But I found out there's some extra bonus added things that I really wasn't taking into account when I bought the car, which is a gigantic screen that plays movies in surround sound. So when I escape to my car, I'm watching Mandalorian, Star Wars comes up, you know, whatever. You want to watch an episode of Friends, I'm in. I have been missing four-wheel weeks at a time in my car.
I'm not smart enough to own a Tesla, I'll tell you. Ain't no way.
I didn't think I was either, but you know what? It's fairly easy once it's just like riding a bike, man. Once you figure it out, smooth sailing.
There you go.
Nick.
Yo.
Man, it's a crazy weekend we've had, huh?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Hey, so we found out we met a mutual friend of yours. You may not remember him. He played guitar for you for a while. His name is CJ Wilder. He's out of Nashville.
Yeah, I know who that is. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
He's all, man, I don't think he's going to remember me, but bring me up. I'm like, all right, I will.
Long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's playing with Marty Ray Project now. So we've actually had Marty out for the last, what, 5 days, 4 days?
Yeah, he's still here.
Yeah, so it's it's been crazy. Yeah.
Man, that's awesome. Well, tell CJ I said hello. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Now, do all of your girls, are you also living in the same household? Is there separate parenting with the stepchildren?
Well, you know, I moved here about 10 years ago. I was doing radio down in Florida, and I was making the drive back at Julie when we got divorced and I went to Florida. Julie came here. They were from here. Julie grew up in Ashland, Kentucky, and I was in Tampa doing radio, and it was probably the hardest 7 years of my entire life, no question. I was traveling, commuting back and forth in my contract. I would work 3 weeks. I would come home a week, work 3 weeks, come here a week. And man, you talking about, and I'm sure a lot of dads out there that can relate, you talking about misery, buddy. I lived it. It was, you know, some of the most painful times that I had ever spent in my adult life. You know, I always said you drive like hell to get to go see them, and you go through hell when you drop them off, you know, and it was tough. There was times that I had dropped her off one time in Louisville, Lexington, and the pain was just so unbearable, you know, of letting her go, and her, that's when she was, of course, littler, and hanging onto my neck, and, you know, I'd pull over on the side of the road and throw up, and I knocked my car glass out with my fist one time, and it was pretty painful, and I don't mean to go around the subject of what you asked, but that's kind of how I got here to be a dad full time, you know. Being in Tampa, I was there about 2 years, I think. And my boss walked in one afternoon after I got off the air, and he said, "Hey, take this home, take a look at it, read it, and see what you think." You know, and I didn't think anything about it. I went and played golf that afternoon and got home, and I opened up that envelope, and it was a contract for 5 years for $2 million. And I screamed and yelled and called all my buddies in Georgia and said, "Man, fly down, you know, because I mean, that's a lot of money, you know, for anybody." And I had made money in my past, but to actually see that on paper, you know, that for the way that I talk and my actions and my satire is worth that kind of money to a company, you know, and we partied like rock stars that whole weekend. And then that Sunday evening, everybody left. And then I was sitting there in a big 3,000-4,000 square foot house with nothing and except pictures. And I would walk by Caitlin's room, you know, and then I was sitting on the sofa that night around 2 a.m. I was looking at all these pictures on the mantle of her, and I was counting on my fingers. I said, okay, let's see, 5 years. So I'll miss first grade. I'm going to miss second grade, third grade, fourth, but I might can make it home by halfway through the fifth grade. And I started thinking of all these things that I was going to miss, you know, and I would lay in bed at night and I'd say, "God, look, I got all kind of money in the bank. And what if I just went and gave that to the homeless shelter down here in St. Pete? Could I get back that daddy-daughter dance I'm going to miss next weekend? Or what if I gave away every money, all the money I had that I've ever made and saved up? Is there any way I could buy back missing, walking her into class for the first day of school? And all the answers were no, because, you know, I learned down there that, you know, you can't buy back, you can't buy them back. You can't buy memories, you know, it's impossible. And I just woke up that the next morning, I wrote on that envelope, "You're worth more than what's on the inside of this." And I sealed it, put a piece of scotch tape on it. And I told him I wasn't taking the job. I was coming home. And that eventually led me to get to where I am now, to be able to see my kid every day.
Noble.
And my daughter saw that envelope about a year ago in her hope chest. And she said, "Damn, Dad, we could work something out. $2 million of money." You know, you got me driving a Chrysler 200 and I could have been in that Tesla.
Right, exactly. But, you know, it's something to be said. At the time, it was the choice, and it was the right choice, I think. Oh, and I'm blessed to – it's funny. We have similar paths. I work in radio as well. I have for the past 20 years here in Southern Oregon. But I was fortunate to where, obviously, I'm close to my children. I'm with the mom still, and they're all living under the same roof. So I didn't have to even think or juggle that. Now – granted, there was never a $2 million paycheck or a contract that was anywhere close to that, because we are it's a small market, but I still work in radio thinking about getting that. And while you're telling me that story on what I would do if put in that same situation, it's, of course, I want to say, I know I want to be with my children, but, you know, until confronted with that, I can't say that I would or wouldn't. Yeah. I would assume that I would make the right choice.
I lived with that a lot, you know. I left there, went to Atlanta, you know, with Clear Channel at the time, and that's where I grew up and I was from. And at least that was, you know, 400 miles closer, but it still wasn't close enough. And so I eventually dropped it all and was fortunate enough to get a gig here with iHeart now, of course. And it's really weird. You're going to laugh at this. Both of you laugh at this. But when I moved here in 2012, I bought a house about three blocks from her. Her and her mom, who I get along with great, you know. And the damnedest thing is she could ride her bike to my house, you know. And she was 8, 9 years old at the time or whatever. But even when she left, even when she jumped on her bike and drove back down the sidewalk, unbearable.
Yeah.
Unbearable. To this day, I'm 57 years old. My daughter is 17. And to this day, I don't know if it's PTSD. I don't know if it's just, you know, I've never had the luxury of most fathers that got to live with their kid full time, but it's still unbearable. She can come over here and spend the night, have a great time, you know, or we get in an argument or whatever, like all dads and daughters do or kids do, get up the next morning and leave. And it's all I can do to pull myself out of the bed. I still struggle with it. And now she's getting ready to go to college.
Yeah. You know, what are you going to do then, man? That's
the gun in the mouth. That's no, just kidding. But that's, I don't handle that part of it well. I'll be honest with you. I struggle on that end of it. And I didn't have a very good upbringing. I really didn't ever have a dad around very much, abused as a child, you know, to some degree. And so maybe I've been looking for that book in the library, you know, on the parenting, but I've yet to find one. But that part of it, I do struggle with to this day.
Yeah. Sure. It doesn't exist. It's just, you got to take it as it comes. And, you know, I can't imagine. I know it's coming for me too. I have a 17-year-old stepdaughter. She'll be a senior next year. And she splits time from here and her dad. Her dad's a great guy. He's a good dad, good parent. And I know it's coming. It's at least I think. What we know it, the way she's going, she might end up living with us till she's 25, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, I know the options are, it's going to happen. And I'm not looking forward to that day either, man, at all. Yeah. Thankfully, I still got two youngins. I got an 11-year-old son and an 8-year-old baby girl that I still get. That's going to ease the pain. But I think when that 8-year-old, you know, she just, she, as of right now, she's, I ask her, what are you going to do? Are you going to go to college? Are you going to leave daddy? She's like, no, dad, I'm going to live with you forever.
You know, see, mine said that too. And now none of they can't wait to get the hell out.
Exactly. It's the cute words of an 8-year old,
you know, and I get it. You know, I tell you what, I've handled better than I thought I would. And I don't know about the other dads out there, you know, and I think Caitlin appreciates it. And Isabella does too. I've handled the boy thing better, I think, than I thought I would. Now, maybe it's because she has a boyfriend now, but he's a really good guy, you know? Right. And I think Caitlin was always worried that I wouldn't, you know, now listen, don't get me wrong. I could freak out at any minute, you know, but I have handled, cause it's inevitable. And I always said, if my daughter did the same thing that I did when I was in high school, I think I would be okay with it, because when I went to school, you know, I'm probably much older than y'all are, you know, it was a more innocent time then, you know, there was no social media. There was, you know, I never saw drugs in high school. I was an athlete, played college basketball, you know, but unfortunately society and times are different now. And, you know, I have to give her space, you know, when it's very difficult. I don't think I can be any more honest with you than I'm being. That part of it, I probably smother to some degree, probably text too much, probably call too much.
Yeah.
But I guess it's because I've just never had her enough, if that makes any sense at all. You know,
makes perfect sense, man. I understand completely. And, you know, and if I go off the history of other guests we've had and, you know, friends and people and just, you know, seeing life and everyone's life's adventures, if you want, that's what you want to call it.
Yeah.
I think 17 to, you know, 21, 22, there's going to be a little bit of disconnect, but right around that 23, 24 year old mark is when they start gravitating back to their parents. I know you've seen the meme, you know, 0 to 5, I want my daddy. Oh, no. 5 to 10, they love my dad. And you know what I mean? It's going to circle back around. And those, yeah. I mean, those are going to be as precious as they were from the times when you bring them up when they're little.
That's 100% true. My oldest son's 22. And sure enough, 17 to 21, it was like, whatever, dad, I'm doing my thing. I'm in the army. I'm doing my thing. And now all of a sudden, every couple of days, hey, dad, how's it going? How's the workouts going? What's going on? I can't wait to come see you, dad. And it's like, what happened? Man. This is awesome. So, yeah, so it does come back. Yeah, my 17-year-old daughter's looking at college on the East Coast. I'm like, you don't even like staying home alone. Like, how are you going to go to the East Coast? What the hell is this about?
I'll be down here if she needs anything. She can always yell at me. We'll make sure she stay down here.
And on that,
Isabella, my stepdaughter, she'll be gone the day she graduates. She's going to be a traveling nurse. She's going to go to college or Iowa Grant. She'll get her degree and she's gone. Okay. Jeremiah, my stepson, I don't even know he's alive. He's the easiest. We just had to make sure his heart's beating every now and then. We never played all the sports, you know, basketball, track, all boy. Caitlin, she's an artist. She has the creative side, and us creative people genuinely tend to take longer to find our way. You know, I struggled, you know, I did 5 or 10 different things before I ever figured it out. So, I hope she, right now she's not a big fan of dad because, you know, I'm a little more of the disciplinarian. I see things that I don't like that I speak up on, and it's harder when you're a dad that don't live in the household with them. I mean, there's not a dad out there that watches podcasts that won't agree because, you know, we feel like we lose some of our authority. You know, we say one thing and sometimes you're not always on the same page with the mom and the mom says another. And then, you know, the dad is the outcast. And, you know,
amen.
That's probably our biggest struggle as of late. It wasn't in the early years, but as she's gotten older, that's been a little bit of our struggle. She's strong-willed, likes to do things her way. And those, you know, us dads, you know, and all three of us are, that's not always the right way. But sometimes you just got to go, well, I'll just be here when you fall flat on your face. because you're gonna fall.
Yeah, and, that's for damn sure. Well, Cletus, let me tell you, you are not alone. You are not alone. There's I can see two guys literally within a foot of me right now that are in the exact same boat as you are when it comes to that. So I mean, if you could take solace in anything, if there's a light at the end of any tunnel, there's you ain't the only one.
I'm definitely the stricter parent of my ex and I, and my daughter is like tries to do whatever she wants. And I'm like, nope, you're gonna be home at 9. You're gonna do this. You're gonna do that. And her mom is like, oh, you can do whatever.
That sucks.
I'm like, stop.
And I'm here. And it's trying to, you know, establish that, okay, there may be one set of rules over here, but over here under this roof, these are the rules. And they've always been the same. Right. I mean, like for example, just recently, and again, Chloe, sorry for throwing you under the bus, girl. since they were little, we don't light candles in your bedroom underneath draperies.
That's a really good rule.
Common friggin' sense, okay? And it got away with it for a while, but now she's 17 and she's like a little hippie chick and likes smell good things in her room. And she comes home and I walk in, there's a friggin' candle, a flame right here, curtains right here. It's like, I literally almost lost my shit. I apologize. But and I look at her and I says, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm older now. I'm responsible enough. It's okay. I'm like, you realize what you are saying right now. The words coming out of your mouth as I'm looking at what's happening. Oh, that house could burn down, girl. I can do it at my dad's house. I'm like, I don't give two flying rats asses what you do at your dad's house. And trying to get her to understand and respect, I don't know how it is over there. I'm not a fly on the wall. I don't have cameras built in. All I know is what I have here and what we do. And trying to get her to, you know, adhere to that, or at least somewhat respect it, or hell, even fake it, you know, at least when I'm around. it's not happening. It's very difficult.
Hearing y'all say that, you know, that I've always said that, you know, as hard as it is for us as dads to navigate that, imagine how hard it is on the kid.
Oh yeah.
To have to try and navigate it, you know? And I try to take that into consideration sometime, you know, which I don't always, again, don't always do a good job at it, but you know, adults like we're the selfish specimens in the world. We're completely selfish. We're all self-centered because we get married and we love one another and we go, oh, I love you, I love you. And then one day we go, I don't love you no more. Well, I don't love you anymore. Then we go our separate ways. But we have this, you know, beautiful creature that continues to love both of us, you know. And then the next thing you know, their lives are, you know, torn apart to some degree, no matter how good you make it. I'm from a broken home many different times. And it scarred me for life. There's no question. No question. I don't even know what it would be like to live. I never had one dinner in my entire life with my biological mother and father. Never know what it was like to hang out at the dinner table and say, hey, dad, you know, dad, hey, mom, hey, mom and dad. Never. All my life was dysfunction. Completely. All dysfunctional. And I've paid a dear price for that. You know, I told my dad one time and I regretted it. I said, you know what? I'm going to be a great dad because you taught me how to be a great dad, because you damn sure wasn't one. All I had to do is do right the opposite of what you done.
Right.
And I'll be a great dad. And we later made amends, you know, before he passed away, and life was good at that point. But it's a struggle, dude. It's just a struggle. It's even more of a struggle when you live apart from, I think.
I can't attest to that one, but I take your word. I believe that. Whew, getting deep and serious on Dadcast today. Wow. I'm gonna drive us right off the rails here. Quick, hard, sharp turn. I'm curious about your radio career. Are you still doing it in any form or fashion?
Well, let me tell you about that. Let me tell you about the radio career. So, 2005, I started.
That was your first time ever cracking the mic?
Ever. You know, when I was in seventh grade, I had my own radio.
Me too.
Yeah. Really? All right. Well, you'll this. When I was in seventh grade, I had my own little radio show. It's called One Eye Jack on WHITE because I went to White Elementary, and I was One Eye Jack because a guy by the name of Thomas Summerize threw a pencil at me and it stuck in my eye, and I had to wear a patch for about a year. So, but once I got into the music business, I always kind of knew that that might be where I ended up. You know, I enjoy the microphone. I enjoy that side of it. And towards the end of my career, that first time, I could kind of feel the demise. You know, I didn't want to be the guy singing on the back of the hay truck for 10 people. You know, once I had toured with the greats, the Brooks and Dunns and the Toby Keiths and all those guys, I didn't want to go back to single A ball. I'd been in the majors for a lot of years and didn't want to go back. And so I took the job in Tampa. Best boss in the world, Mike Collada. I don't know if you guys know him. He was my boss at CBS down there. And he was truly a manager of people. He got me. Like, he would walk in the studio, and it was my show, the Cletus Tea Party, and he'd walk in and shake my hand on a Wednesday and it'd be a plane ticket or a gas voucher. And he'd say, man, go home. Go to Georgia. Go to Kentucky. Go see your kid. I can see it in your eyes. You're missing that little girl. Get the hell out of here. And ain't a guy in the world do that right now. Trust me, I never found another one after him when I left. But if he had walked out of that building and quit, 200 employees would walk right behind him. He was the Pied Piper. We would all follow him because he believed in us. Well, I stayed there 2 years. That's when I turned down that contract. Went to making good money, more money than I deserved. Went to iHeart in Atlanta. Stayed 9 months. I just thought I would be massive there because that's my hometown. I grew up, you know, I knew all the baseball players, the football players, Chipper Jones, one of my best friends to this day, you know, and I just knew that they would all, you know, I sucked. It's horrible. Absolutely the worst 9 months of my life. They fired me and paid me for another year. And I said, how bad of a morning guy do you got to be to get fired? And they'll still pay you not to go somewhere else. And then I went back to Tampa. I was in Tampa for another few years. And then I made my way to iHeart here where my daughter lives in Huntington, West Virginia. And I was here up until Thanksgiving, right a couple of days before Thanksgiving. We had been working on a new deal. My agent had been working on a new deal for about 6 months. And then I had a little conference with one of the powers that be up in the corporate world. I'm sure you guys have them too.
I used to. And I'll explain that in a bit.
And it got a little bit sideways on the call. And my daughter was actually in the car. And she said, Dad, I'm going to get out of the car now. I don't like what's being said to you. And so she got out of the car. And I knew then that it was over. And I basically said, I'll never take another nickel of your money. You won't ever have to worry about me ever again. And it basically got into a point where it's like, because I don't run, I'm not a board op. You know, I've never sat behind a board. I'm a co-pilot from the day one. And next thing you know, they start wanting me to run a board and, you know, do this. And I said, you got the wrong guy. You know, it's hard enough to be funny at 6 o'clock in the morning, much less being responsible to run two stations, you know.
Damn right. Yes, sir. I've been there.
He said, well, you're the one of only 10,000 in the company. And I said, I'm probably only one of the 10,000 that's got you 10 years of number one ratings too. Boom. With that being said, I'm out of here. So I walked. And
so that was just a few months ago, 2 months ago.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's
all right. Fresh.
I got my last check the 4th, January 4th.
So what are your plans now? Any idea what you're going to do moving forward?
I got to do just file bankruptcy. That's it. No, I'm kidding.
Come on, man.
Listen, you know, for God didn't give me a bunch of looks, but he did give me drive and he did give me passion. And I'm a hustler. I just am. You know, I always have been. Because I it never came easy for me. Some things come easy to people. I don't know of many things that ever come easy for me. I have to work hard and craft my craft a little different or better than the other guy. And, you know, I've had my barber license. I was a barber by trade when I got out of college. I've had my barber license since 1984. I've kept them current since 1984. I also have a real estate license that I got 2 years ago. And it's like I tell my kids, look, I don't care what you do. Just go do what you love, but have something. If the dream falls apart, becomes a nightmare, you got something to fall back on, you know. And I'm going to tour again. I start January 29th, tour again, starting Bluefield, West Virginia. New video just came out this Saturday, 2 days ago, already over 400,000 views on it in just a matter of a day and a half. And nice. I'll be fine.
I'll
face it hard. And
now you've already considered such an endeavor, but I've got one if you haven't, and I've already got a name for it too. The Cletus T. Judcast.
let's all three do it. We'll do it together.
I'm in. I mean, I've only got negative 3 hours a day already booked up in all the world, but let's cram that sumbitch in. I'm in.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the with the radio power we have right here, and then Nick?
Wow! Come
on, Nick. I had always wanted to start a thing called the Dad Advocacy Program for single dads, and when I put that on TikTok, man, it blew up because you know there's just a bunch of us out there, and I tell you what, I wanted to do it more for me than I did giving advice to them. Hell, yeah. I need it more than they need it from me. I just, I'm just real open and honest with my shortcomings, you know, cause I do struggle with them, but I'm not worried about my future. I'm, just because I feel like, you know, I got to the point, I don't know about y'all, but I got to the point where hell, I have a hard time taking direction from somebody that I don't know, you know. Now, you know, if it would have been Mike Collado or somebody, you know, my high school basketball coach called me up and says, look, you're being a prick. Then I sit back and go, yes, sir, I understand. And I'll try to do better, but don't come after me when I've never shook your hand and
I get it. I
had a similar situation. I sold furniture and appliances for over 20 years, and we started this podcast and it started taking off. And when COVID hit, the furniture and appliance industry went to hell. Like you can't get anything. And so it was a decision of, do I want to stay and make minimum wage and be told what to do by people I don't like, or do I want to jump in and do this full time and make it work? And so far it's working. So.
You know, you won't ever regret it. I've always said, if the ship's going to sink, I'm going to sink it. Yeah. I'm going to be the captain of my ship, me and the good Lord, you know. Mm-hmm. But I can deal with that. But I'd be damned if I can deal with somebody I ain't ever met before sinking my ship and crushing my dreams. No, I'm out.
And I'm getting my real estate license, so I got something else in common with you. So.
Okay. Love that. You know, I'm remodeling I've remodeled, I think, 18 houses now.
Oh, wow.
And that's why I just try to instill in my kids, you know, man, I got a plan. I don't know always what it is, but if I had to go back to cutting hair at a barbershop, I can feed myself, you know, if I can sell some houses, but I'll make it. I'll make it. It's just my nature. I hope I ain't talking to y'all in a year from now and, you know, living in a cardboard box, but I feel like, you know, I got a great family. I got a great wife. I got a sugar mama. So yeah, I'm all right.
That's not a bad thing to have, man.
No,
so I
know it's not.
Right before the pandemic. So January of 2020, my story, you know, I've been working terrestrial radio, corporate, different companies, you know, the last 20 years, give or take. And I was actually let go. I was straight fired from the place that shall not be named or mentioned. But during the last couple of years of my employment there, I had started my own radio station, you know, streaming with broadband the way it is these days, you know, a Spotify, a Pandora type deal, and called Pirate Radio. I think you totally dig it. P-Y-R-A-T-E. It's basically if you're sipping on a margarita in the Caribbean and you're in a tiki bar and there's music playing in the background, that is what Pirate Radio is. Lots of Buffett, lots of reggae, lots of stuff like that. Yeah. Sailing music. But that's... They let me go, and I spent 30 minutes panicking because I'm like, this is what I do. I'm a radio guy. God dang it. I need to go through that whole process again of sending out blah, blah, blah. And then I was sitting same chair I'm sitting right now, behind the same desk. And I says, no, I have my own radio station. And now I don't have a boss to tell me if I'm doing it wrong or right when I know I'm doing it right. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I am now running that station. I can do what I want. If I'm wrong, then, you know, like you said, it's my own doing. I'm going down with the ship. And and then, you know, I've got other jobs. And then we started this podcast a few months later during the pandemic, which has taken off. And hopefully this is all I'll have to do in the future. But it's crazy how a moment of, you know, being scared and unsure of the future and anger at the employers and the company for unreasonably, in my opinion, letting me go for all the things, you know, story. There's always a story, and we don't even need to get into that. But again, it was the catapult. It was the fire that lit under my ass that I needed. And here we are. And I have a Tesla and great kids. So,
you know, I've said it before. I've been loaded with money and suicidal, and I've been broke and happier in 400 hells.
Yeah.
You know, I've got to do more than I ever dreamed I would get to do. You know, 1990, Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, I was suicidal for about 6 hours driving my car back and forth the bridge in Ponte Vedra, trying to get the nerve up to take my own life, as I had pretty much became a drug addict, still 17 years recovering at this point, 17 years clean. And by the grace of God, I wasn't able to do it, you know, probably because I didn't want to. You know, if you want to kill yourself, you can. But I tried, I contemplated it, didn't. A friend of mine flew me home. I left the car down there in old Honda Prelude and was sitting in the, sitting in some shag carpet about 6 inches deep one night watching the CMA Awards when Vince Gill in 1991 won Song of the Year for a song called When I Call Your Name. And I turned around and my mom was crying. And I said, Mom, why are you crying for? And she said, I'd just give anything in the world to meet Vince Gill. I just think he's the sweetest and best singer I've ever heard. And I said, well, hell, if you want to meet Vince Gill, I can hook that up. And she said, well, Barry, that's my real name, Barry. She said, you've never sang a note in your life. You know, you don't know anything about Nashville. And I said, you want to meet Vince Gill? And she said, yeah. And I said, then I'll figure it out. And that's when the journey to where I'm sitting here talking to y'all began, you know, in a little double wide trailer. And I went down, did an amateur night a few weeks later, a little cub called the Buckboard Country Music Showcase. I won $50 for doing an old country rap song. 6 months later, my mother bought me a Toyota pickup truck with no radio, no heat, no sheet metal in the doors. And I moved to Nashville with about $400 in my pocket. And I would take bass at the YMCA. In the mornings, I'd go to Music Row and try to meet people, and I'd do amateur nights at night. If I won an amateur night, I'd get a room, and if I didn't, I'd sleep in the front of my truck over to Ruby Tuesday's parking lot out by the airport. And a long story short is the ice storm, which y'all have them all the time out there, I'm sure, but 1994, an ice storm came through Tennessee, and I didn't have heat in that truck, and I was scraping my windshield going down the interstate, and I got frostbite on my left hand, and I almost lost three of my fingers on my left hand. And on a Sunday night, I called my mother, Collect, back when you didn't have cell phones then. And I said, Mom, I gave it all I got. I said, I'm hungry. I ain't got no clean clothes. Come and get me. And she said, are you sure? That's just not your nature. And I said, Mom, I can't do this no more. I tried, but I'm just not making any progress. And I'm broke, and I just want to come home. And that very night, as I was on the phone with her on a little transistor radio sitting on a table, I heard a song called Indian Outlaw by Tim McGraw. And I started humming Indian In-Laws under my breath. And while I was on the phone with her, I had the idea, I'm an Indian In-Law. Came to visit me and my squad. I've been here for a month, y'all. I'm about to lose my mind. And I said, Mom, I got to call you back. And she said, well, am I coming to get you? And I said, I'll call you back. And I hung up. I called a buddy of mine. We wrote the rest of it over the phone. I borrowed $250 about a month later, recorded it. And about 2 months later, it was on 199 radio stations. And the rest was history. Now, here's where God came into play. 3 years after that, 2 years after that, I already had 4 or 5 songs out. And selling records, you know, and I was asked to play in a golf tournament at the Hermitage Golf Course in Nashville. And I said, I don't want to play. I'm tired. They said, they need one more celebrity. Can you play? Can you play? So I said, okay, I'll play. I pull up to the Hermitage Golf Course, 1996 or 7. And, you know, they have the big tote boards up on the wall, what hole you start on, the group you're playing in. I'm sure right. y'all played in 100 of them. And I'm on 16A is my starting hole. And it's me, another guy, another guy, another guy, and Vince Gill.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, they had messed up and put me two celebrities in that group. Not nobody asked, nobody requested, and I was paired with Vince Gill. And I rode in the cart with the reason I was there to begin with. I cry right. every time I tell this story. And about on number 14 or 15, I had told Vince that story about Mom. And I said, would you do a video with me and let my mom come up and say hi? And he said, book it. And a couple of weeks later, my John, we were shooting the video. Wives do it all the time. You can see it on the internet. My mother sent me to Nashville in 1992 in a Toyota pickup truck. And I brought her to Nashville in a stretch limo as long as this porch out here. And she pulled up with her two cousins, Myrna and Bobby. And on a Monday afternoon, there was a knock on the door and all the directors and video producers, John Lloyd Miller and everybody knew what was going on. And they said, Moselle, why don't you grab that door? And my mom, why do I need to get the door? And they said, just grab the door for us. And so everybody quit what they were doing. It was the most silent thing you'd ever heard. And I'll never forget watching my mother's feet walk across that floor. And she opened the door and there he stood. And I said, I told you,
oh.
I told you I could pull that off. And, you know, that was probably the biggest highlight other than having my kids, you know, of my entire career, you know, was the struggle, you know. And man, I always think, had I quit or if I'd have went home, or that's why I just don't have the ability to quit. I'm always afraid of what I'll miss. And, I was proud to be able to give my mom that. And Vince, you know, became a dear friend of mine to this day. We talked frequently on the phone. When my mother died, Vince was one of the first to call. And he's a good man, and I'm forever indebted for him for helping me make my mom's dream come true for sure.
Cletus T. Judd. Well, that story, it strikes at the heart of me because I don't want to bring this up, but it's relevant.
Sure.
And I don't want emotion. It's okay. I'm okay, but I lost my mother about 7 days ago. And it's so super fresh, and hearing that story that you could provide that to your mother. I mean, and it's healing for me in what I'm going through right now. So thank you, man. That's amazing.
I did not know that. And,
it's not something I'm, you know, blast. Well, actually I did blast it over the internet, but you know,
man, you know, Mom was such a everything I see. You know, and we can get real deep here, and I know y'all probably don't have very long, but as a kid, I had premeditated my suicide, my demise. It's when my mother died, I died, because I knew that I would not be able to live without her. Right. She was really the only mainstay that I had, you know. And of course, when God gave me Caitlin, of course, that flew out the window. You know, that's never been an emotion since, nor will it ever be. But most of the things that I did in my life, I tried to do for my mom. You know, I was able to buy my mother a funny story here. I was able to buy my mom a small house in a little gated 65 and over community when I was touring with Brooks and Dunn. And I brought her over to the house and we were riding through the neighborhoods, you know, and she was looking at these houses. She's like, oh my God, that's beautiful. Oh my God, I wonder who lives there. And then we pull up to this other one and she said, God, look at that front porch. And I'll never forget, I said, how would you like to sit on that front porch? She said, we can't go in somebody's house. I said, no, but you can damn sure go in yours, because that's your house. She bawled like a baby, and we got out and we walked in the house, and I had no furniture in there at the time, you know, and I had her some flowers on the bar, and And we walked through, and you know, I'll never forget as long as I live. And I'm sure you have poignant moments like this with your mom's. And she was looking at the high ceilings and looking at the, you know, the bathroom with the tile backsplash, because we never had no money, you know. And so we sat down at the bar, and she said, I said, well, what do you think? And she said, well, she said, I love it. She said, but I don't want to hurt your feelings. And I said, you don't hurt my feelings. She said, you know, I love the house, but she said, I just think I love my little apartment better. And she said, but I sure would like to keep the flowers. And I said, all good. All good. You think I give a damn? I'll take you right back to that apartment.
Right.
But it was the fact that I was able to offer it to her. I didn't care every night. It didn't hurt my feelings one bit. I sold it, probably lost 20 grand at the time. But it was just the mere fact of being able to say, hey, I worked hard. I saved a little bit, and I'd like to share it with you if you'd like. Now, she liked the cash. She liked the cash better than the sticks and the bricks. But that was a poignant moment I got to share with mom too.
Yeah, it's emotional, man. I get it. I'm gonna lighten things up just a tad. We are getting near the end of our time, so Nick, you got a fast five for us.
I do.
Okay, so this is a little segment we like to do, and I don't even need to explain what the hell a segment is to Cletus T. Judd. So here we go, fast five, five questions, quick answers. Let's go, Nick. Have at it.
All right, favorite vacation spot to take your family?
Panama City, Florida.
Nice.
Real good fish tacos. Good?
Man, fish tacos. Oof. Dude, yeah. Mm. go to a meal to cook for your daughter.
Oh, God. Hamburger patties with cheese on top.
Nice.
Minus the bun? Yeah. Minus the bun?
Oh.
Okay.
Your proudest dad moment.
Oh, wow. Probably escorting Caitlin down the red carpet at the award show 4 or 5 years ago. And the reason I say that is because I told her, I said, you know, in order for me to have walked this red carpet, I had to climb a lot of hills. And I hope that, you know, you walk in this red carpet someday, you know, when you get older, if you want to be a star, or whatever, you're too going to have to climb a lot of hills before you can walk the red carpet. And then we took off and walked down there. And that was probably a pretty proud moment for me with her.
That's awesome. Your funniest dad fail.
Hell, how much time? I'd like to say something funny, but the biggest dad fail, I think, was the first 7 years of Caitlin's life, spending it in Tampa and St. Pete, thinking that making the money was the right thing to do for her, because I would always say, well, she'll never remember this anyway. She won't remember this, and I can set her up. The problem is, hell, I remember it. Yep. That's the problem. She don't, I do. So, yeah, that's my biggest dad fail, is I thought that 7 years of monetary gain would make for a better life for her. It didn't help a damn bit. Now, dad fail one right there.
Okay. Lighten it up, Nick. There, okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna lighten it up a bit. If you could have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be?
Wow. God, that's a hard one, dude. a billboard with anything on it. Probably me when I was 18, because I was hot then. Yeah. Yeah. So
are you clothed?
Yeah, I had hair and it'd probably be the picture of me when I went to my senior prom, because I put mascara on my mustache. because it was blonde. So I wanted it to be like Burt Reynolds. The problem is I got to do the other side. So I only did the dark side here and I forgot to do the other side. So my senior prom picture, I had a white mustache and a black mustache. Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
Oh, no. Awesome.
And that is Fast Five. All right, I like to always add a couple of questions here to round out the show's episode. So,
okay,
Cletus T. Judd, you can offer fatherly advice for a brand new father to anyone watching this episode or listening to this episode. What is the best, most prolific piece of advice you could give to a new father?
You can't buy them back little when they're all grown up. Think about it.
Yeah, I got it. I don't need to think. Yep.
Yeah, I trust me. I did a show for a Ducks Unlimited banquet one year, and I asked guys, I said, raise your hand if you're not too shy or too personal. Raise your hand if you got six figures of money in the bank. And hell, 40 or 50 of them raised. And I said, raise your hand if you got seven figures of money in the bank. And a couple raised their hand. I said, I'll challenge you to write a check for all of it to buy back the one thing you wish you never had missed. Unattainable. Once it's gone, that's why I said earlier, you know, you can't buy back a memory. Try to be there. You can't be there for all of it, but damn, don't let the monetary issue stand in the way, because you'll hate yourself when they get older. Trust me.
Things you
might know. Yeah.
You can play a show, a single show, with any artist you've never previously played with, living or dead. Who's it going to be?
Wow, boy, that is a good one. Probably Elvis. Probably Elvis.
Absolutely, man. Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
I Elvis. Show I ever went to in my entire life, 1976, the Omni in Atlanta. I was at an Elvis concert. Sit in the very top row of the Omni, and you could barely see him down there. I went with a friend of mine, Jeff Black, and I'm going to tell you, man, in Elvis's prime, he was a bad boy.
Were you 11 years old in 76?
I was six, four, seven. Yeah, I was 12.
12, yeah.
Wasn't I? Four, yeah. Oh, yeah, I was 12 years old, 76.
Wow, man, that's something that not many people can say. And it's that number is getting lower and lower as time goes on.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it was, I'm almost 100% positive. 1976, Jeff Black and his mom, Betty, took us down there. And I just remember a white outfit. I was so far away from him, you know, I couldn't see him. But, you know, that was, man, I know people that knew Elvis, and man, the stories. Oh my God. Joe Mascalo was Elvis. I think he was his keyboard player at one time. Dude, the funniest stories you've ever heard in history from Elvis. They said they'd go watch football with him on a Sunday, and they'd all be all the bands, you know, the Memphis Mafia, they'd all be over there. And if anybody bet against the team that Elvis liked, Joe said he'd fire him on the spot, tell him to get the hell out of his house, then back in Graceland, and they would all get in the car. Joe said before they get to the end of the driveway, he'd call and go, now look here, guys, I don't like watching this stuff by myself. Is there any way you could turn around and come back? I got a little ahead of myself. You're not fired, and they'd all turn around and go back and hang out with him. But I've heard some great Elvis stories along the way for sure. But I think he was a great dad. I think he would have been. With Lisa Marie, and I know he was a great son to his mom. I've heard that he was a phenomenal son to his mother.
There you go. Cletus would play a show with Elvis, and I can't say I'd argue that, and I'd pay top dollar to see that performance, man. Yeah. Woo-wee.
Oh, man.
All right, so I got one more question, and this is one I ask all my guests, even spanning back to radio days. And if you've spied any of our episodes and you've already know what question I'm going to ask and you know the spoiler, then, you know, shame on me. But there was one particular artist who answered this question so amazingly perfect that every answer that I've ever heard since has yet to even come close. So now it is your turn, Cletus. Oh, you can leave the house. When you leave the house in the morning, what is one thing you cannot leave without? And when I give you the answer of what dude said, you're going to go, wish I would have thought of that. Or will we?
That's a trick question.
It's not. It's not really. It's not really.
God, this is going to suck because I know it's probably my phone.
Yep. Okay. There you go. And that's typically what most everyone will say. And for years and years and years, you know, their keys, their laptop, you know, whatever. That was the general answer. And then one beautiful afternoon a few years back, I'm on the phone with George Thorogood. And I ask him that question. You know what his answer is? Without skipping a beat, the man says, what's one thing I can't leave home without? Well, kissing my wife, of course.
Wow. Dang it, I'm getting set up.
I apologize. I wasn't trying to set you up, but I'm still searching for an answer that will top that.
I don't think there is, man. I don't think anybody can top that one. I think George Thorogood is the man. So
now I feel like a guilty moron. Thanks.
Tom Arnold said gummy bears or something along those lines. So, you know, we're good.
Something weird. Yeah.
we should all be that way. You know, I have a great wife. I've had several of them along the way, you know, friends with most of them so far. They all left for more than they came with, I can tell you.
All right. Nick, I know you had, and you told me this yesterday. When I saw you, you said you had one question, and I want you to ask it while we're still recording, so it's on record. And let me just forewarn you, Cletus, Nick does this every freaking episode, so I apologize up front. Nick, have at it.
So I like to name drop Joe Rogan. I heard that you know Larry the Cable Guy, possibly.
I do.
Yeah. Is there any way you can possibly set up a Dadcast with him and us? He's going to be about 45 minutes away from where we live on February 11th doing a show at a casino.
Or at least plant a seed, Nick. You don't have to go like, hey, we want to hang out and spend the night with you.
You know, I don't want to spend the night. I might want to cuddle, but I don't want to spend the night.
Man, you know, a really good friend of mine, I used to have Dan's number in my phone. I don't think I have it anymore, but one of my good friends that I'm going to do some shows with this year, Reno Collier, is best friends with Dan, and Reno and I talk two or three times a week. Let me see if I can't maybe go that route and throw it and see if he can pass it along. And where's Larry playing at there? Is it a
it's called Seven Feathers Casino. It's up by Roseburg. So it's about 45 minutes north of us.
Are y'all in Oregon?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did the one of the first times I've only been to Oregon once, but I Klamath Falls.
That's
about an hour and a half away.
Yeah,
from where you were.
Falls when OJ was on when the verdict came in.
94.
I remember Falls, but I'll see what I can do. I'll put a bug in Reno's ear and see what I can do.
Okay, and also
contact info so you can yell at me, call me, text me, or whatever. Let me see what I can do.
Nick, are you also, you're seriously adding an also to that question?
No, I have an idea. Cletus said he's on tour, and we are now doing our own concert. So part of Dadcast, we also manage bands. We manage Marty Ray Project. We manage a couple other bands. But we also do very awesome, intimate, 60-cap venue VIP shows in Southern Oregon that we do a really nice state-of-the-art live stream. We would love to have you come out. So who do we talk to?
My wife would love to come out there.
We'll put you up. We have a deal with some cabins on the river. We'll put you up in. We'll take care of you.
Yeah, it's no Klamath Falls, man. It's way better. Trust me. Yeah. It's
man. You know what I remember about Klamath Falls was for some reason it's maybe it was because I was so far north or whatever, but it would seem like if I could have jumped high enough, I could have touched the clouds. We were on a golf. All just like travel forever out there, but man, I would love to come back out there and stay and do, you know, maybe work my way out there, work my way back, you know, do three or four while I'm out there and have a man to come out with me. And yeah, man, that would be awesome. Let's
Well, you can chit chat after after the show and email and whatnot. But please, Seed Planted, amazing. Cletus T. Judd, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. And to be, I ain't gonna lie to you, man. I don't pull any punches ever. This has been. We've had a few deep episodes here and there on Dadcast. Usually they're lighthearted and fun. This one we got a little bit serious, but that's a good thing. And I can honestly say from the bottom of my heart, sharing and hearing those experiences with you, this has been one of the more enlightening and more deeper personal episodes for me that we've ever done here on Dadcast. And I'm just so happy you came on to do it.
Well, let me tell you something. Closing that means the world to me. You know, I always said, you know, the first time around the fans kind of changed my life. This time around, I hope I can help change theirs. You know, life is short. You know, I know I got a lot less left than I had, you know, a long time ago. All of us do. But I appreciate you saying that. That means as much. That's why I say when people come out to shows, you know, I just want you to feel something. I'm not just a stand-up comic. I don't have a pocket full of one-liners or whatever. I just try to be one of the dads. You know, I just try to be one of them is what I like to say. Done some great things, and I hope that my story will touch others and make them go out and do something with their life, because if some idiot like me can make it, by God, anybody can. And thank you. I'd like to do this again sometime. Just let me know, and we'll hopefully I'll get to see you guys soon.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I'm going to ask you to commit right up front every year. And by every year, I mean 1 year so far, we do a Father's Day Dadcast special. We usually record it a week or two prior to Father's Day. So that's coming up in a few months. We'd love to have you on, and we're going to have like a Brady Bunch scenario where there's like 75 boxes on the screen and we're all just bantering back and forth. Should be fun. We'd love to have you on.
I'm in. Just book it. Plan on it. When we jump out there, I'll shoot y'all an email, give you all my contact stuff, cell number and all that. We'll get together soon.
Perfect. Sounds good. Awesome. To everyone listening, to everyone watching, thank you much for hanging out. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you are watching on YouTube, please like it up, subscribe, comment, do all that good stuff, and we will see you next week. Thank you again, Cletus T. Judd.
Nick. Thanks, man.
See you guys.
Yeah. See you.
Thank you.